And Vernon, of course, Vernon Eppy will stay with us and take some of your phone calls as we talk about consciousness and dimensions. So get ready to make the calls, and we'll be right back to take them. Welcome back with Vernon Eppy. Of course, we'll take your calls as we talk about consciousness and dimensions. Did the ancients, Vernon, and I want to talk about the Giza Pyramid first in a second, but did the ancients understand any of this?
Yes. I think the ancients understood far more than we even begin to contemplate. And I'll tell you how I have realized this. When we developed our TDVP model, looked at 39 different parameters. We looked at all these different theories of everything. We looked at things that were common. We looked at things that were specific, but not as common to many of the theories. And then we looked at special elements and unique elements. Well, a theory of everything or a meta-paradigm ought to score a perfect score. And using the criteria that we were using, and we had circulated this around to a lot of other scientists and a lot of others who were involved in terms of these kinds of theories, our model scored 39 out of 39.
That's huge. Perfection.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Dr. Close's and mine, before this, each scored in the 20s. There was nothing that scored 20 or above other than ours. There were three that scored 19, amongst which was Kabbalic mysticism. And Vedic mysticism scored more than the standard model of physics did as well. So suddenly, we were aware of the fact that these ancients, without the mathematics and without the physics and without the logical components, their philosophies, their ideas were still such that they were virtually better than all the other ideas that were around, or certainly equal to two of the best lots of ideas, which were those of Dr. Adrian Klein in Israel and David Bohm in terms of theories. These scored very high, but so did Kabbalah. So in answer to your question, yes, the ancients, I think, knew a great deal. And, you know, when I came across this Kabbalah thing, I started comparing it with our model. And I was quite shocked.
Really?
Because the only model that spoke about space, time, and consciousness as a triad was Kabbalah.
Interesting.
And we had worked on this for 2 years. And I said to Ed, this is awful. This is terrible. Here we've worked on this whole thing. We think we have an original theory. And some of it is all expressed in Kabbalah. And then I realized that if we were dealing with fundamental truths, if we did not have a basis in terms of ancient mysticism, we would be in big trouble. This is something that has endured over thousands of years, and it was an advantage. Of course, it didn't have all the other criteria. That's why it scored 19, not 39. But it certainly is a big answer to your question. The trouble is people don't unthink what they've thought before because of mystical components. But they have to when somebody comes along and demonstrates mathematically, which can be replicated, that there are nine dimensions, nine spinning dimensions, not 10, not 8, not 4 or 26 or any other number, because the mathematics only fits with nine. Then suddenly, this becomes an absolutely major finding because one cannot dispute it.
Vernon, when you were in Egypt, by the Giza
Pyramid. I wasn't in Egypt. Ed was.
Ed was. Okay. Okay. And Ed's not with us right now. I wonder, did he have anything spiritual? Did he ever talk about that?
Yes, he spoke about his experience in Egypt. In fact, it was one of those strange synchronicities. When he was going to Egypt, we met up. I was flying or coming back from overseas, and we met up in Amsterdam. It just was synchronous that he was flying through there. And his experience in Egypt, when he did go, was something that made an enormous impression on him.
Let's take some calls here, Vernon. We'll go to Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. The atheist is with us. Hi, Bill.
Yes. Hi, George. Hi, this is Bill. Yes, and I am an atheist and an amateur scientist, and I am a skeptic, but I am open-minded, and I'll prove it to you with the first of my two questions. I'll ask the two questions together and then listen to your answer. And, George, my first question is going to blow your mind. It's going to knock your socks off. Question number one, relating the concept of God, which I am an atheist, but listen to my question anyways, relating the concept of God to quantum mechanics in relation to Schrodinger's cat, the thought experiment, as we know, where Schrodinger's cat could be alive and dead at the same time, depending on a quantum event. Question number one, could there be a God and could there not be a God also at the same time? Meaning, could God exist as well as not exist at the same time? And question number two, have you or the other guest who's not on now, the physicist, read the great book, physics book by Dr. Victor J. Stenger called The Unconscious Quantum?
All right, let's pick that one up first, Vernon. Have you?
No, I haven't read The Unconscious Quantum, so I wish I could comment on it. But thank you for the recommendation. As for your first question, Bill, I think it's a great question. And it's a wonderful parallel in terms of quantum mechanics and Schrodinger's cat. I don't know if it works, personally, and I'll tell you what my problem is. My problem is this, that much of physics is based on exactly what you used, the phrase quantum. Quantum implies something discrete. In computer terms, the little pixels on the screen. When we're talking about the concept of a divinity, this is infinite. This is continuous. There is no discrete element. We are talking about something without beginning, without end, at that space level, at that time level, at that consciousness level, so that you can use beautiful parallels in terms of the so-called Schrodinger cat analogy, but it does not apply to the infinite. Wonderful question, though, Bill.
Okay, next up we go to Gary in Tampa, Florida, east of the Rockies. Hi, Gary, go ahead.
Yes, sir, George, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Vernon, I got a question on your infinity and also how the dimensions are embedded in one another as you go higher. And I understand how it's easier to look from higher dimensions lower than lower to upper. In the first dimension, and if you have a point, points make up lines, correct?
Right.
Okay, so in a finite line, aren't there actually an infinite number of points or even an infinite number of singularities in that finite line? Because you can take a point and keep cutting it in half, making it smaller and smaller. You're never going to get to a point where you can't cut something in half again. So aren't there, in fact, an infinite number of lines and an infinite number of points in a finite line, and conversely, an infinite number of lines in a plane and an infinite number of planes stacked on each other, even in a finite volume? So if that's the case, if there is an infinite number of points in a finite line, how do you explain an infinite number of points in an infinite line?
It's an excellent question.
Is that like finite squared?
Yes, you've made this very clear. It's an excellent question. And strangely enough, we cover this in part of the mathematics in our book, Reality Begins with Consciousness. You're quite right. But if you look at it in a different kind of parallel, let's imagine that somebody is having an MRI scan, because we can imagine that. And you can take an infinite number of cuts through that. The MRI scan is reflecting three dimensions. You've got an infinite number of planes of two-dimensional cuts. And if you were to look at it further, you've got an infinite number of points in relation to that as well. So that in this way, yes, you're quite right. There's a problem, however, and that is when you're looking at that word infinite in this way, you really are looking at what is called, what George Cantor called countable infinity, as opposed to what we're calling the continuous infinite. Now, the countable infinity has one-on-one equivalence, but it also has a component where it's so large you can't count it, and this is why we're saying it's countable infinity, but it's actually the transfinite. And the transfinite is what we sometimes refer to as the 10th plus dimension, because it's still discrete, but it is higher than those 9 dimensions, and it has entirely different mathematical characteristics. So you can't add one lot of dimensions or one lot of lines onto the lines already in the transfinite, because as you know, infinity plus infinity equals infinity in that kind of context. So it's an excellent question, Gary, and you're right on it. And it is a wonderful insight. And if you go on brainvoyage.com, you'll be able to see reality begins with consciousness, which incidentally we now have in 3 different versions. We have the full book. We have a book called Key Features.
And you have an e-book now,
today.
Don't you?
That's an e-book. Just come out today, in fact.
Perfect timing.
And the third one is called Glimpses and Glossary. And what has been arranged is that people will get a complimentary copy of Glimpses and Glossary if they get Reality Begins with Consciousness, the full book, or the Key Features. But this will give you a real perspective. Although, I must tell you, the mathematics that we discuss there is still somewhat simple compared with our next book, which hasn't come out, called Space, Time, and Consciousness. This whole area is a never-ending challenge. It's a very, very exciting challenge, though.
So, Vernon, tell me about this, space and travel. Can we travel through these other dimensions?
Well, this is a speculation, because I cannot give you the mathematics of it, and I cannot necessarily argue from a physics point of view because we don't know. But I suspect that we can, and I suspect that we do. We've spoken about some examples. We've spoken about near-death experiences. We've spoken about out-of-body experiences, and I suspect, as we argued, that if there's survival after bodily death, and the evidence to me is cogent in that regard, that also reflects a certain travel. The difficulty is communicating back to our current dimensions. Can we travel through space in that regard? Well, we're traveling really through this unified space, time, and consciousness into other dimensions. And the implication, therefore, is that if you had space travel, maybe that's the quick way. You're taking a quick flight off to Jupiter. Just shift to another dimensional domain.
Mm-hmm. Just like a wormhole.
Yeah, the only trick is to get back. And if you can get back, you can talk about it.
Go ahead, Vernon. I'm sorry.
Maybe the trick would be to, you're thinking it. You actually are projecting your creativity. And not only can you, so to say, I'm not sure if it's a wormhole or not, but this is the common term one's using. Not only can you travel through space, no reason why you cannot travel through time. No reason why you cannot backward or forward travel through time. We have these restricted perspectives of time, but if you look at it mathematically, it's certainly possible. And there is beginning to be some data in terms of retro time as well.
The traveling through wormholes, might that lead to other universes?
Yeah, it certainly might lead to different dimensional domain experiences. Now, if you want to call this another universe, we can. Maybe other universes are in different dimensional domains, different groups. Maybe not the first 4 dimensions, maybe dimensions 5 to 7, for example. Maybe it links up with the dimensions 5 to 7 would not make one necessarily all-knowing, all-powerful, not omniscient or omnipotent or omnipresent. That's a quality from an infinite point of view. But one would certainly have a different perspective in knowledge. And if you were to argue that one was traveling elsewhere, you throw in this whole thing of our so-called aliens from other planets, other experiences, or other universes. Are they experiencing the same dimensional domains as we are? How are they traveling? The whole thing is the translation across these dimensions. And so it's not only the dimensional differences, it's the translations. And this is where these vortices, these spinning vortices come in. I'll just tell you a story about the vortices.
Sure.
This was something that since my teen years, somehow I always had this idea that fundamental to our reality were some kind of spinning curved shape. It could be an elongated spin, could be a helix, it could be circular, but it was always spinning and moving. And I thought this was a craziness. But this is how, in a way, I met up with Dr. Close, because we were both having the same kinds of thoughts, and I met up with several others, that vortices are the most fundamental shape in our whole reality, in our whole universe, in our three dimensions as well. There was an architect in Chicago who, in fact, would build his buildings in a circular shape. He would not use square kinds of shapes because he said that is not natural. The natural shape is vortices, is the spinning, is the roundedness. And you can extend this roundedness all the way through. And I think this is how a lot of this travel through dimensions occur. And of course, again, this is very subjective, but when you talk to a group of psychics, I call them subjective paranormal experience, because this way I'm not saying they are or are not, but very commonly they will report the vortices that they experience, even at the level of healing, and the vortices round individuals. Are these the same dimensions? Are they experiencing an expanded kind of awareness? Maybe it's something that we have to look at, and something that's very difficult to research, because subjective experience is very difficult to research. And everything is subjective. We're experiencing our reality subjectively, and our combination reality then becomes what we call objective reality.
More to come with you when we roll right back on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, split show for you, the hypnotherapist Dr. Bruce Goldberg will join us for the first couple of hours, so make sure you're part of that Coast to Coast show. And when we come back in a moment with Vernon Nepi, the doctor, we will take final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Vernon Nepi with us, your phone calls as well. Vernon, by the way, I want to thank you now. Great job that you and Edward have provided for us tonight. Great insight, by the way.
Yes, well, it's a very exciting show, and you do a great job, George.
The future. Let's talk about time travel for a moment, and then we'll take final phone calls. How possible is time travel if you truly understand your paradigm?
Again, it's a speculation, because one is jumping to certain conclusions. But I think that time travel would be eminently possible. I think the difficulty beyond time travel would not so much be the time travel. It is, as I've indicated, the returning back to one's original situation, one's original dimensions. In other words, it may be irreversible. Let me use a strange parallel here.
Sure.
I wonder what happens when one dies. In a way, where is one traveling? One's not returning. You know, one can come along and say, well, what about reincarnation or whatever? I'm not going that route.
And what about heaven and hell?
Well, this to me is a theological concept.
Right.
And I don't have any fabric to look at it in terms of science. I will say the following, that amongst our models, we realized that even when we talk about infinity, Georges Cantor described the infinity of infinities, and people laughed at him, and people got most upset. The theologians got upset because they thought maybe he was insulting a divinity, and the mathematicians said, you can't have this. But the point about it is, if you look at this concept of the only knowing, all-knowing, all-aware individual or entity or whatever you want to call it may be a divinity or God, then you're talking an infinity of infinities. If you're talking a location, and you've spoken about heaven, you've spoken about hell here in terms of the questions, or I will just say in terms of survival after bodily death, and I've talked about this imprint, almost this mirror of the finite inside the infinite. If you're talking about this kind of location, could it be that everyone's post-mortem survival is different? It's not necessarily a heaven or a hell, but it's certainly subjective and a subjective experience. And in our model, incidentally, our model not only postulates survival after bodily death, it is one of the necessary hypotheses that is really very high inside our model, because there has to be this infinite continuity. But if you look at this infinite continuity and you look at it in terms of survival, you'll say each person's survival is different. Maybe they're different in terms of dimensional expression, and they will interpret realities if they allegedly communicate differently. So that people have often said, well, you know, obviously this is all nonsense, because these people who supposedly are communicating through mediums aren't even saying the same thing necessarily. Well, obviously they're not, because it's a subjective reality. I look upon it like, instead of like heaven and hell, where people might compose their heaven and hell, I look upon it as the closest we can get. One's in a dream state. And one's merging. One's not necessarily even completely an individual. Dr. Close kept emphasizing distinctions, and the most primary distinction you have is between self and not self. And that's merged very much in a dream. Maybe how much more is it merged after death?
Good point. To the phones now we go. Final calls. Andy, truck driving in Illinois, first time caller. Andy, you're on with Dr. Vernon Nepi.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good, Andy.
Hey, I got a question for you here. When you're talking about, like, deja vu, is it possible that we've already experienced that, and, like when we die, we actually go back and just start all over until it's perfect?
That's a good possibility, okay. Vernon.
Yes, Andy, this is a good question. And in my several books on deja vu, you asked me about how one becomes an expert, George. I suppose it's also writing books. I've written four books on the area.
Yes, you
and
have.
My deja vu trilogy is again available for download at brainvoyage.com. But in these books, I entertain one kind of deja vu, which again is a subjective description, but people will describe their ostensible, what they interpret as reincarnative experiences. And therefore, when they are having certain experiences again, they perceive this as deja vu. And some of them will describe it as the same thing is happening again. So that you could philosophically say maybe they're busy learning something and they had to relearn that same kind of experience. Again, it's pure speculation, but it's a good question and a very logical one. Of course, there are easier explanations for the deja vu phenomenon.
All right. Thank you. Susan in Pennsylvania. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I wanted to know, do I experience all these things every day and I don't know it? Like the nine dimensions and things, or this is just, I mean, like it's always there and it's always around me, but I don't know if I'm experiencing it.
I think so, Susan. I think that we are only experiencing a restricted four-dimensional reality. As I said, it's restricted in time. We're only experiencing the present. And it's restricted in space and how we sense and perceive it. We cannot see the ultraviolet and the infrared. So if you look at this kind of parallel, there's no reason why we cannot say that if one can mathematically demonstrate from physics that there are nine spinning finite dimensions, some of those dimensions are hidden, but we are probably a whole unit experiencing everything, the finite and the infinite. It's just we are not registering it. We are not perceiving it. We are not conceptualizing it. We are not interpreting it, but it is still all there. So yes, I think that one is experiencing the full range, or not experiencing, it is happening, the full range of our finite reality. But we can only experience what we can subjectively experience. And this is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's like the physical reduction valves. Imagine if you were experiencing all the input that was coming through. You would be totally and utterly overwhelmed. This is a survival mechanism, an evolutionary mechanism that only allows us to experience some elements, not all elements.
Vernon, do you think those on other planetary systems, ETs, are probably trying to figure this out too, or have they already done that?
Well, it's an interesting question. First of all, it assumes the other planetary systems. Now, a good friend of mine is Peter Davenport.
Great guy.
Has been on your program on numerous occasions, so that to a large degree, having had these many chats with Peter and seeing some of the data, I think the data, again, in this area is somewhat cogent that we are not alone. So let's imagine that there are extraterrestrials. I would assume that it is logical that they may not be experiencing the same kind of dimensional awareness, in other words, our first four dimensions, and therefore they're experiencing things differently. It might not be they're more advanced or more retarded in that regard, but they are certainly different. And it might be that they look at it and they think, these humans on Earth, why can't they conceptualize what we're conceptualizing? But again, I'm purely speculating.
Next up, we go to Rich, Long Island, New York. Rich, thank you for calling. You are up.
Hey, George. Great show. Great show.
He's doing a super job for us, isn't he?
Yeah, Edward left already, right?
Edward has left, but Vernon continues.
Yeah, Vernon, I really appreciated this show, and I didn't think I was going to, because usually when somebody approaches consciousness from a scientific standpoint, they never get to the real deep truths. But you, both you and Edward, impressed me incredibly. I couldn't believe all the things that I've realized through my studies in Eastern psychology and also through spirituality, like everything proceeding from consciousness instead of vice versa, and many other things that you said, they just rang so true with me. I was wondering, have you ever looked into the philosophical truths that reach the same conclusions that you reach?
Yes, we spoke about Kabbalic mysticism, and Vedic mysticism is not too far behind. And these philosophical truths, I don't think we should ignore because they are not pure science, or they're not scientific. They have endured, and we have to think, Why have such ideas endured for millennia? They've endured probably because there is something highly pertinent in that regard. Of course, you use the phrase philosophical truths, and I'm assuming you're referring to these kinds of mystical truths as opposed to people having different philosophical ideas such as dualism or a materialistic monism, because I think there are a lot of contradictions in many of the fundamental mind-body models.
Jeffrey in Simi Valley, your turn, Jeff. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. This is the best show you've ever had on. Thank you so much. I would like to speak of, I've always heard it said that things go from order to entropy. And I would like to suggest that or point out that actually you have, say, a house which is orderly, eventually falls apart into entropy. But prior to that house existing, there was nothing there. Several generations prior, someone was born, a child was born, had a child who thought of this house, and minerals were mined in order to make wires and pipes and wood and so on to build this house. And so there was entropy prior to this house existing, where there was order, and went back to entropy again. So that kind of makes order a sort of a singularity, and there's sort of a cycle between entropy to order to entropy to order, so on and so forth. And there's a couple of books I'm going to be getting pretty soon, by the way. This is really a great show.
Yeah, Jeff, you've again made a certain very important point. You use that word cycle. Do you see the vortex in terms of that? That's the first. The second is, of course, for those who don't know what entropy is, it's this tendency towards a state of disorder.
Right.
Now, if you read in Reality right. Begins with Consciousness, we actually talk about ordropy. We initially called it extropy, which is not just the opposite of entropy, because entropy, you see, is unidimensional. It's in one dimension. It's unidimensional. Ordropy, standing for order, is multidimensional. And it's multidimensional not only at that finite level, but it might originate at that continuous infinite level. And I think it's very, very pertinent. And it produces all sorts of concepts pertaining to life and living itself. Life is a dramatic example of ordropy, of remarkable order. And it's very difficult for me to conceptualize how some scientists will say, well, if you have order there in terms of life, there must be added disorder somewhere else. Because, again, they are not getting out of the shell, out of the box of just the finite. They are not looking outside to the whole existence. We said it's all the laws of nature, but that whole existence includes the infinite. And it has to include the infinite if you have a theory of everything, incidentally, because if you didn't, there is, of course, an incompleteness theorem that Kurt Gödel posited. And if he posited this, he posited it because if something is inside something, how can you be complete outside? The only way is to have this completeness is the infinite and the finite being unified. And within that unification, is ordropy, is this awareness of order, and it might be that you have an equivalent disorder when you're just looking at finite reality. And within this awareness of order is the awareness of life. It is something, George, that is such a fascinating area, it's worthwhile spending several hours discussing.
To those, only have a minute left, Vernon, but to those who have the ability to use this, to tap into it, doesn't that enhance their life, that their performance of living is just excelled?
Immeasurably. And this is why I differentiated between self actualization, which is great, but limited, and self-transcendence. And of course it enhances it. And this is the merging of science and spirituality.
And that is the gift all by itself. Vernon, what's your favorite website that you have?
Well, you know,
because you've got many.
We've just set up vernonnepi.org, and as vernonnepi.org, or what will go to it is 9D spin for 9-dimensional spin.com.
All right.
That's a favorite.
We're going to link all those up for you. We'll make it easy for people. And your book, of course, Reality Begins with Consciousness. Vernon, thanks for being on the show.
It's my pleasure, George. Thank you so much for inviting both Dr. Close and I. Unfortunately, Dr. Close's connection from a phone point of view became limited. This is why you only heard me that third.
Well, you carried the torch well. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, John B. Wells, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.